Corrie ten Boom. Corrie ten Boom was a Dutch watchmaker, the founder of a youth club for teenage girls, and later on a writer. She was quoted as once asking, "Is prayer your steering wheel or your spare tire?" It's a great quote and a great analogy, comparing something about which many of us are not as familiar as we would like to be, prayer, comparing that with something we all know very well, automobiles. Especially so because we immediately sense that her point is that the former is better than the latter, that it's better to have prayer being something you use all the time, which can help you move forward through life's challenges on a daily basis, than it is to have for use only in an emergency. And yet, before we get to that steering wheel, let's put in a word for the spare tire. If we follow the analogy to its logical conclusion, we know that both steering wheel and spare tire are essential for any properly equipped automobile. We all know the importance of the spare tire, even if it is one of those miniaturized little donuts they give you nowadays. We know the importance of that spare tire when we're forced to pull off the road in the middle of the night and we have a flat. And so yes, if prayer is something that you only carry around in your trunk just in case, something to be resorted to only as you await the test results from the biopsy, or as you pace the waiting room outside the delivery room, or as you fight the urge to have just one little drink when you've managed to stay sober for the past month, well, that spare tire is not a bad thing to have at hand. But still, the thing is, we often do not know how to pray. We're not alone in this. I take great heart from one of my favorite passages in the Bible. It's when Jesus' disciples, who have been following him around for months, years, who've been observing this teacher all the time, pull him aside and say, "Lord, teach us how to pray." So in our turn, we worry. If I decide to open that trunk and to pull out that spare tire, what exactly am I looking for? What will it look like? I'm not sure how to pray, and I'm not certain I have all that 1928 Book of Common Prayer flowery language. So what do I say? One of my favorite spiritual writers struggled with the same question, and so she came up with this, the title of one of her books: Help, Thanks, Wow. The Three Essential Prayers. For Annie Lamott, prayer starts with where you are and with your need. If you need assistance, if you feel utterly alone, if you're worried sick, if you need a lifeline, pray for help. If you find your soul is just over brimming with thanksgiving, you're stunned at how good life is. You've watched those 40 kids sport together in that swimming pool when the 8-year-olds have their birthday party. When you feel that you have received far more than you ever imagined you even deserve, pray thank you. If you find that your jaw has dropped in amazement when you see your baby for the first time, if you find yourself stunned at the conclusion of Beethoven's 9th symphony, if the sight of cresting breakers off Sandy Neck in a storm just takes your breath away, whisper, "Wow." Help, thanks, wow, the three essential prayers, all at the ready in your trunk. Corrie Ten Boom's question, "Is prayer your steering wheel or your spare tire?" reminds us, however, that prayer can be far more than something which may be of use in an emergency. Prayer can and should empower our daily living and help us set our direction each day. But Corrie Ten Boom's quote, you may be thinking, and to continue the analogy, it might make for a nice bumper sticker on a Prius. But is it really anything more than that? What would she know of prayer? Well, you be the judge. During the Second World War, Corrie Ten Boom, working with her father, helped many Jews escape the Holocaust by hiding them in their home, a home which was all of a half block away from police headquarters. They had room in their home, but there was a time of food shortages, and so there was very little for those that they housed. The Dutch issued ration cards to non-Jews, and Corrie remembered a father with a disabled daughter who had been in her youth club, and the father was in charge of the rationing program. In her book, The Hiding Place, she relates how she went to his house one evening and the father asked how many ration cards she needed. She writes, "I opened my mouth to say 5, but the number that unexpectedly and astonishingly came out instead was 100. He gave them to her, and she provided cards to every Jew she met. Eventually betrayed by an informant in the Dutch resistance, Corrie and her family were arrested and sent to a concentration camp. After 3 months in solitary, she was put on trial, and there she testified about her work with youth and with the mentally disabled. The Nazis scoffed, for they had long had a eugenics program by which they had been killing mentally disabled people for years. She responded that in the eyes of God, a mentally disabled person might be more valuable than a watchmaker or even a lieutenant. Returned to the camp, Corrie and her sister began a secret prayer meeting for her fellow prisoners using a Bible that had been smuggled into the camp. Shortly after her sister died, Corrie was released, evidently through a clerical error, and she returned home to open doors to the mentally disabled in need. 1 week later, all the women in her unit at that concentration camp went to the gas chamber. Prayer for Corrie Ten Boom was more than a spare tire. It was her steering wheel, compelling her to open her heart to all of God's people, guiding her to risk her life for the oppressed. It's what Paul is after in that letter to Timothy. From another translation, from The Message, "The first thing I want you to do is pray. Pray every way you know how, for everyone." Everyone. It's a word Paul repeats time and time again in this short excerpt from his letter. Pray for everyone, because God wants everyone to be saved, because Jesus Christ died for us all, to set us all free. Everyone, even kings and those in high positions of authority, even the emperor who opposed Christianity. Now, these are not prayers to the emperor, these are prayers for the emperor, that he might govern properly and for the safety and welfare of all the people. But again, why pray for everyone? Why not just pray for ourselves, for our family, for our clan, for our nation? As John Chrysostom, the 4th century Christian author and Archbishop of Constantinople, would write some centuries later, "No one can feel hatred towards those for whom they pray." No one can feel hatred towards those for whom they pray. God desires to save all. And so we can pray for the criminal whose crimes we abhor. We can pray for those we consider to be our enemy. And yes, we can pray for the supporter of that candidate we absolutely detest. And in that praying, we can be changed. We can come to see that person not as some sort of cutout cardboard caricature, but as a child of God, a person created in God's image, a person Jesus Christ died to save. We all know how hard it is to do what should be a simple thing, that simple thing which Jesus commanded us, love our neighbor, love even our enemy. Prayer can change us so that if only gradually and one prayer at a time, we can do just that. Love everyone. This praying for everyone can be so abstract. The concept of praying for everyone can just be so overwhelming that it can devolve into some sort of generic blandness. Which is why I love our time for prayer here at West Parish when we have our prayer screens set up, our candle screens set up, and you all come forward one at a time to silently light a prayer candle for a person dear to you or for a problem that you are facing, whatever it might be. And as you lean in to light that candle, it gives me, standing behind that prayer screen, a chance to hold you in prayer. It's often not anything specific, not for anything. It's merely usually a prayer of thanksgiving for you, for this unique person who was standing in front of me, this child of God, this gift to me, this gift to this congregation, this gift to the world. It's also why our parish prayer list is so helpful. If you have those names in front of you, it can help you focus on their specific needs. And if you start there, it's easy to expand from there, to expand your circle of caring to those you may not know the names of, but those who are in similar situations. It's why images of specific people and situations can help us. Praying for migrants fleeing horrific situations in their home countries can seem so abstract, but when we see a photo of a migrant father and his daughter face down in the mud along the Rio Grande, even the hardest hearts can be moved to pray for those desperate enough to seek a better life elsewhere. When we see a photo of a dust-covered soldier crouching behind a bullet-riddled wall on the streets of Kabul, we can find ourselves moved to prayer for all who serve this country far from home, those who wonder if we even remember that they are there or why they are there. If we let prayer be our steering wheel, we can find our attention dragged away from an almost obsessive fixation on me and my problems to a caring for others, to a caring for the world. The first thing Paul tells Timothy, and Paul tells us, the first thing is prayer. May it be for each of us, in our time of need, a spare tire. On the journey of life, a steering wheel. And to quote Ricardo Montalban, when you are exhausted at the end of the day, may prayer be a comfortable seat of fine Corinthian leather.
So weird.
Who then is in need of prayer? It's me, it's me, it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer.